Gillingham are on the Wembley way.
Hello and welcome back to the Jewels Fancast. I'm joined by 2009 playoff winner and former Geneva captain Josh Wright. Welcome back to the podcast, it's been a while.
Yep.
A lot has changed since the few years I last caught up with you. You've gone from 3 career goals to, you know, being very rare, you not being on the score sheet. What's changed for you in your career since?
You could look at it in a few ways really. The biggest is my position and the role that I've been asked to play in the times when maybe I have gone and got goals. Like with this season, it's predominantly growing up, I was asked to play what's called now the sitting role, the number 4 role, number 6, however you want to look at it. And if I look back with a little bit of regret really, because I feel I was pigeonholed a little bit too early in my career, I get and see why managers did it, because I like to get on the ball and I keep it ticking over, I keep the ball well, switch play, that sort of stuff. And I used to enjoy doing it, and I still do enjoy doing that, and I'm more than happy to do that role. But ever since I was maybe the reins were taken off of me and I was let go in terms of going forward, get up and down the pitch, because managers started to see that I had the energy and had the legs to be able to do it. And so I started to get in the box more, and to score goals you have to get in the box. Of course you can score from outside the box, but you give yourself much more chance by getting in the 18-yard box and the 6-yard box if you like. And so there's that, and with that comes being allowed to be in there with set plays, wide free kicks, corners, long throws, and just being an opportunity. So the biggest thing is that really, that over the last X amount of years I've had that opportunity to do that, and then to back that up, you've got to want to score. You have to want to score goals, and maybe I've been guilty over my career, especially younger days, that I've maybe didn't shoot enough or want to score enough, but believe that go and get some goals, and as I say, want to score those goals. So it's a bit of everything really, and then with that comes confidence. When you start scoring 1, 2, 3, you gain confidence, you gain belief, and you can just kick on from there really. But the biggest thing is the type of role and position that I've been asked to play, and that sort of changed and adapted the older I've got.
You obviously had 2 spells at Jules. The first one was very special, playing at Wembley and obviously getting a promotion to League One. We went into it last time you was on, but just quickly, how special was that and how special was that squad?
Yeah, it falls into the top category, the top 1, 2, 3 if you like, of my career and achievements, because being successful and winning is what it's all about, and promotion is what we're all in it for, and to take the club that you're at to the highest it can be, whether that be right at the top or whatever level you're at, to win in that division or as I say, go up in that division. So yeah, it's quite a while ago now. Funny enough, I've actually come across a photo of me and my little cousin in the pitch after the game last night, and I compared it to a photo I had with another little cousin this season, and the change in us and them. And it's something that I will never ever forget. I always go back to, always remind myself, my memorabilia that I've got indoors, the shirt, the medal, the programme, the team sheet, and tickets, and things like that. And something I'm very proud of, and something that we, as I say, the whole Jules family will always remember. It was a great squad we had. It was a winning squad, if you like, albeit I wasn't there for obviously too long, but right the way from the manager and Swimmo, all the way through Mark Robson, and then the coach, and all the players. It was we had a lot of leaders, a lot of men, a lot of people who wanted to win, and just had that bit about us. And it was a fantastic time in my career, and what a day out at Wembley that was.
I remember interviewing Stuart Lewis, and he said you two shared a room the night before, and that you two were just like excited kids waiting to play at Wembley.
Yeah, I remember not being able to sleep that well. I knew Stuart growing up. He played with my brother a lot, and the families knew each other. And we knew how proud we were going to feel the next day, and it was a
fairy tale stuff.
Yeah, it was a fantastic day, and as you say, we were very excited. Couldn't sleep the night before, and the game, it was a lot of adrenaline going on, but it was just a great to win. And the minute that we won, obviously, right at the end, couldn't have written it any better.
We'll skip forward a little bit. You returned obviously 6 years later to the Jills. First of all, on trial, how does that differ to signing just normally for a club and having to prove yourself?
It's there in what you're saying. You come in and you sign for a club, and straight away you know you're there, you've got the security, and you can hit the ground running, and maybe play with the shackles off and relax a little bit, because you know that you're under contract, call it what you want, safe or whatever, but you are a player at that football club. So that's obviously how it should be and how it should feel, and it's much better that way. But to come in trial, you know you have to impress, but impress hard as well, because obviously to bring you in, it's either a case of maybe they're desperate for that position, or it's just a case of have a look because they know you are a good player, and while you're out about the club, they mightn't necessarily need you in that position. And that was a little bit with me. I was debating going to one or two different places, and one of them was abroad to America, and I just got the call on the Saturday, at a barbecue, and got the call to look, there's an opportunity to maybe come in and train, and probably more just to keep fit, but who knows, maybe have a little look at the same time, possibly need a player in that position. And I came in, and for whatever, listen, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, that's one of the only times I've really done it, and I hit the ground running straight away. I really trained well, I came in very fit, I've been doing my own pre-season, and I was fit, I was strong, I was hungry, I knew that I'd love playing for Gillingham again, I knew that I'd enjoy playing for Justin and David Kerslake at the time. And I knew it was a fantastic opportunity for me, so I hit the ground running. I started very well, and I didn't really look back, to be fair, and I knew within a few days or a week that I had a great chance to sign, because I knew how I was training myself and what they were saying to me, and I could see what the standard and ability was like, and I knew I'd fit right in. And as I say, I never looked back, and I was delighted that it all worked out in the end.
Your first season back at Priestfield couldn't have started any better. Gillingham were third in February. Your individual performances were brilliant. I'd make a case of it being probably the peak of your Gillingham career, goal scoring aside. We had teams like Sheffield United and Mill. How good was it playing in that team?
Yeah, look, we just clicked. We had momentum. We were winning games, and then we were going into each game with confidence and gaining that every week. And not a lot was having to change. We had that formation. Everyone looked at it. Whenever I talk to people now in football, it was like, oh, that Gillingham year, you had the diamond.
Yeah.
And the diamond worked with great effect. And obviously, I played at the bottom of it quite a lot. We knew we played at the top in Daki.
Yeah.
And he was firing all cylinders, obviously, the first 6-7 months of that season especially. And then the two on the either side, we knew we could mix it up, whether that be Aaron Morris, Jake Hessen, Tyler. Bernhoff, did he come in that year, or was that the year after Bernhoff came in?
I think the year after Bernhoff came in.
And obviously, there was one or two others who played Jordan out, and we had that year. Yeah. And we had, obviously, boys up top, scoring goals with options, and we were very solid at the back as well, right away from Nels all the way through. So we just had a great core in that team. We had a great team spirit.
John Egan too.
John Egan obviously has gone on to have a fantastic career today, and we'll obviously continue that. And we just had a togetherness. The change room was fantastic. It's quite young. I was quite surprised when I was there. I was looking around thinking, wow, it's quite a young squad here. I'm not sure how we're fair. And obviously that worked out very well, and we just had no fear. Every time we went into a game, we knew what we were about, we knew we were set up proper, like a proper football team, from obviously Justin and Kurz, and we just had a bit of everything about us. And I really enjoyed that season, especially the first 6-7 months, and it's one that stands out big time.
No matter how good the team was, one thing that always stood out and people always spoke about, no matter whether it was Gillingham fans or media or whatever, how good was Bradley Dack that season? That was maybe one of the best individual performances all season long I've seen in that division ever.
Dacky that year is the year that's made him and set him up, because obviously he was slightly quieter the back end of that season and the season after with what things happening. And that season really determined his career. It gave him his confidence, gave him his drive and vision. And it was just everything happened for him. I remember my first game, Sheffield United, funny enough.
4-0,
When I came on, was it Plymouth the week on the Tuesday before that, or the Tuesday after? One of them.
Tuesday after.
It was Sheffield United for the first game, and he scored that great goal. And I played against him the season before, ironically, Lake and Orient. And I remember sort of coming up against him along. My brother said to me, he was a good player, that boy. The number 23 as well at the time, Bradley Dack. And I said, he's a good player and a nice boy as well. And everything happened for him that season, and good luck to him, because he was very good and he was a catalyst in our team. It was a big part of it, which obviously got us so close to where we probably could have and should have gone that year.
Yeah, you touched on it there. The second half of the season wasn't as good as first. Performance slightly dropped, and obviously we didn't pick up as many points, and we managed to miss out on a playoff spot. What exactly went wrong, do you think, and what was maybe the defining point in the season?
There's a few factors, really. I think there's only so long a group and a squad can go and continue to do what we're doing. Obviously,
you mentioned the age as well. Obviously,
results will dip. Age, experience. I think a big thing was obviously one being Daki suffered a little bit of an injury, if I remember right, and obviously his form didn't quite get going after that. And he'd obviously produced so much in the season already, and understandably, and sometimes you can't continue that the whole time. But I think if, without going into too much, I think if we'd have made two or three signings in the window, in the January window, if we'd have strengthened a little bit more than we did, when you're up in that position and maybe punching, call it what you want, above your weight, or sort of overachieving maybe with the squad and the budget that we had, I think maybe if we'd have, if they'd have signed two or three maybe more experienced players or players with a bit more quality to maybe have got us over the line, gave us that bit of depth in the squad, I believe we'd have done it. And I think that was the only real reason that, whether the managers wasn't backed or the budget wasn't there, I don't know, for whatever reason, the signings never happened. I think maybe that would have been the difference in us going all the way or at least making the playoffs.
Yeah. The next season, Jonathan Edinburgh, on paper, assembled a fantastic squad. We had the likes of, obviously, yourself, Paul Konchesky, Emmanuel Thomas, who was ability-wise brilliant, Billy Knott and Scott Wagstaff all coming through the door, as well as keeping Bradley Dack. Many fans thought we'd be challenging for the title. Was the expectation set on you for promotion?
Yeah, I think we... I remember definitely going into that season thinking we'd have a great chance. I knew it wouldn't be easy. It never is easy in the leagues, any league. And I did think we'd maybe definitely be top half, pushing into the playoffs, and we'd have a great chance at the playoffs. I think I remember it being quite a tough division on paper that year with the 10 of the teams who'd come down or come up, etc. And some of the teams that were backed or sort of added to their team. But yeah, listen, it was, I think sometimes when you've got a lot of very good players who all want to be playing, it's hard to fit them in and try and find the right formation. We just didn't quite click at the best of times that year. And for me, the change happened miles too quickly. I think there was maybe a little bit more going on. I'm not sure what, but I think if things stayed, we weren't doing bad. Well, we know we were underachieving, but from where we were the season before to then, it was only in time things would have changed and turned for the better. But listen, the change did happen. It was frustrating, but yes, we probably should have been doing better that season with the squad we had.
What was the changing room like? As I'm saying, you obviously had characters like J. Emmanuel Thomas, you had Oscar Davey in there, Dak, who maybe, obviously this is just speculation, you could have been frustrated if he didn't get his move away, which was obviously for a reported £2.5 million.
Yeah, listen, the more characters you get, the harder the change room is maybe to handle and control, and when results aren't going well, it does never feel as good. And what a lot of us, the core of us in that change room had the year before, it was frustrating that we weren't producing and weren't picking up the results maybe we should have been the next year. And listen, it was a good group. Again, it was youngish, but it was a good group. All the boys you just named there, good kids, good people to be around. And as I say, if you're winning, then the change room pretty much takes care of yourselves. So it became a little bit more difficult, but no, look, Daki on that as well is a good boy. No, he knew his move would come at some point. So yes, probably deep down he's thinking I should be elsewhere now, but he's got a good heart, he's a good professional, he always gave everything, and he knew at some point he'd be going, so he's giving everything he could whilst he was there.
First day of the season didn't go to plan, and we struggled with points throughout the season. As you said, the change coming in January of 2017, he was replaced by Aidy Pennock, who'd only had one managerial position before that at Forest Green, where he failed to get employed with the biggest budget in the National League. What were your first thoughts when you heard the news of Justin's departure?
Obviously, I was disappointed. I was gutted.
Because you had a good relationship with him.
I had a very good relationship with him. He was a very, very good manager, as well as having a very good assistant in Kurz. And the biggest thing is, no one really wanted him to be sacked in the change room. You know, he had a group there that all wanted to play for him, that were his boys, if you like. And okay, the results weren't brilliant at that time, but we knew he wasn't far away. So it just sent a big shock in the change room. I was obviously very, very disappointed as well as his captain at the time, and you feel like you let a manager down when they get the sack, because at the end of the day it's us as players who are going out there, and if we're not picking results up, it's them who take the brunt of it, and that's the cruelty of football, if you like, for managers and stuff. But look, it was very, very disappointing. I knew he'd be back, I knew he'd have bounced back and got another job not too soon after. But yeah, look, it's not one of them things, you have to pick yourself up, lift yourself and get ready for whoever comes in.
Looking from the outside in, your relationship with Aidy didn't get off to the greatest of starts of him stripping you of the captaincy and giving it to Max Aymer. How did that affect you, and what was your relationship like at first with Adrian Pennock?
Yeah, look, it's who would be unless you're not a leader, or unless you don't want to be captain, who would be happy with your armband being stripped from you if there's no real reason for it to be stripped from you, you know? And
I think the reason they gave in the media was that he wanted it to be a centre-back, which was a bit of a cop-out.
Yes, that was the bigger thing for me, not the bigger thing for me, but the thing that got me even more. It was a complete and utter lame excuse, if you like, to say it politely. And it was the timing. The timing was, if I remember right, he was in a hotel about to play Oldham away. And we'd had our breakfast, we'd had our pre-match, and I suddenly got a pull after pre-match. He was sitting at the bottom of the stairs, and he told me like a few hours before kickoff. And again, the timing was all wrong. Could have been done and in a much better format and an easier way. I'd have had to accept it either way, but it sent not the stuffing out of me. I didn't see it coming. I was shocked. And if you ask the majority, if not all of the boys in the change room that year, they'd if they said who should have been captain or who they wanted to be captain, I think they'd have said me. And I was very close with Maxie. I don't think I was rooming with him at that time. I think I was rooming with Aaron if Aaron was still there, and Max would have been with Daki or one of the two, I can't remember. And I spoke to him, Max was in shock. Max didn't really, I don't think, expect it or want the armband at that time, and the age he was and the way he see himself as a player and character at the time. And yeah, listen, I wasn't happy, and it didn't get us off on the right direction and right foot. And I think the performance that day showed that at Oldham. I remember actually speaking to the chairman the next day, and he was talking about it all and whatever else. And it just didn't sit right with me, the way it was done and the way that it was worded. It was I didn't like it, and I think there was a vision and a route that he or people at the club wanted to go down, and that was the start of it, you know. And I could say maybe a bit more, but that's where I felt it was going. But it was something I had to get on with and suck up and crack on, which is what I did.
As I mentioned earlier, the Pennock reign was one definitely to forget under his influence, but you had your best record in front of goal under Adrian. You went from 3 career goals to 14 in one season. As you said, the change in position worked massively for you in that season, and penalties was your thing.
Yeah, look, it was, as I said earlier on, which obviously I don't have to say again about the position, he just said to me, didn't want me to play that sitting role, go and get forward, you've got the legs. I think personnel dictated a lot of it because of what he had available at the time, and as well as a fitness coach, said about distance and high intensity running, what he wanted out of the team and stuff. And I just, do you know what, if I'm being honest, if I look back, I just played with, say, no fear, but it was like, you're going to do that to me, take the armband off of me and treat me the way that you've done. What have I got to lose? Here I go. It was one of them, and prove you wrong, and there's not a chance. You're not going to play me, and I should be the captain. I am the leader here. I'm still taking huddles before games and still controlling that dressing room. And he wanted me to do a lot more because he said I was still going to be sort of the club captain. So basically, I was going to do all the dirty work behind the scenes and not be the captain on the day of the game, which again, I wasn't having, I didn't like. But anyway, that was that, and I just went off and said, come on, then let's go. We've got nothing to lose, and that was it. As I say, I was in the box for corners, free kicks, throw-ins, but I was just go and have a bit of a go and get up and around the striker and go and get goals. And a lot of what I hit that season seemed to go in. Obviously, I did take penalties. I think I only scored, was it 4 penalties out of the 14 goals? So like 10 were from open play, if you like, or from set plays. And yeah, it was just one of them seasons, if you look at it. I know Cody got a few towards the end as well, but if you take those goals away, and I don't like to say this because it's not just me, it's a whole team and group, but the club would have been in League Two without those goals, and that's the truth about it. So that's the way I look at it, and I hold my head high and feel proud from that, and honest from that.
You broke records in that season with a hat-trick of penalties in 9 minutes against your former side, Scunthorpe. I think the only other player to do it was R9, Ronaldo, which isn't bad company. That must have been unbelievable.
Yeah, all surreal, really. Again, I remember it was in March time, around March.
I think before the penalties, we had been very bad that day as well.
We were poor that day. We were 2-0 down. We were 2-0 down, weren't we?
One or two, definitely.
I think it was 2-0. I think we were 2-0 down, and I just remember out of nowhere, one penalty took it, scored. Second come quickly, I was like, whoa, take two in one game, which is quite weird.
Yeah.
bang to all, and before you know it, we're on the front foot thinking, if there's anyone going to win this, it's going to be us. And I remember breaking into the box, won the penalty myself, and I remember the team celebrating with me like we'd just scored. And I was obviously, it was a bit different for me because I'm thinking, hang on, I'm going to take this, and I did debate giving it to someone else because it was like, can I really do 3-in-1 game? And funny enough, I spoke about him a little bit already. Maxi, a close friend of mine, said, whispered in my ear, why don't you just smash this one down the middle because of where you've gone with the other two. And I debated and I thought, you know what, no, I'm just going to go with something I do. And I went to the left, I think that with the last one again, one to the right, two to the left.
Yeah.
And it went in and I just went off celebrating like a mania, like the whole stadium did. And
it was
something that would probably never ever happen to me again, but it would only very, very rarely happen in a game. And if someone scores all three as well, probably even more rarer. But yeah, look, again, one of them things that will stick with me forever. Will always be in my mind, something I'll always get up, memorabilia, and obviously when people ask me or show it, and obviously something I'm labelled with, they can say the penalty king and all that, although I've missed a few since, but everyone misses them. And it was a moment that will be top in my career, and saying that I'm very proud of, and saying I'm happy that I did in the Gillingham Stadium up at the Rain and End, and as I say, remember forever.
It must have been so odd for you from the season before that to not take penalties at all to the next season, you're scoring 3 in 9 minutes.
Yeah, it's weird.
Brilliant. It's
weird to come out of nowhere. I think I just remember one or two getting missed that season or someone being injured.
Yeah, how did it come about?
I think it was one or two missed and then Cody or someone was injured and I said to myself, you know what, I'm going to take the next one. And we played Southend at home and I said, I don't know if I said before the game or I just said that I was having it or I just picked it up until I was having it and scored, and that one, obviously the Scunthorpe run come a few games after, and then that was it really.
We just managed to out that season, as you said, without your goals and Cody's. I remember Cody scoring two brilliant goals against Bristol Rovers.
Yeah, I scored that as well.
Of course you did. I remember it being the three players, or four players we had that seemed to care and give anything that season was yourself, Cody, Dak and Stuart Nelson when he did play.
Nelson,
massive, yeah. And something Aidy was accused of was definitely trying to assassinate big characters in the team, such as the four I mentioned, which I think without you he would have been big
see,
trouble.
That's why, I don't know if he was going to ask something else then, but that's why we'll go on to this. It shocked me with what he was trying to do from the start with that what you just said, and then how it all materialised moving into the next season and that, because it was, I don't like saying these words, but my performances and leadership, drive and goals basically kept him in a job from the start. So for what happened, I don't know whose vision it was, whether it was the club's vision, whether it was his vision, and it gutted really let me down, because everyone knows what Gillingham meant to me, means to me, and I didn't want to leave, I didn't want to go anywhere, and yes, there was interest that was coming in, but the club could have looked after me and warranted me another way and rewarded me in another way, but they didn't. It was the complete opposite, and that's where it was very strange.
I mean, when me and you and a few others met up 3 or 4 years ago, it might be now, I remember you saying to me you didn't want to leave Gillingham, you wanted to retire at Gillingham. Club captain at the time, had everything going for you and us, and it was brilliant. I don't think any of the fans would have wanted you to leave.
No,
definitely not in the way that happened. He was accused of the same thing at Forest Green, actually. But Northampton wasn't emotional day. You obviously had a penalty that day. What was it? What's it like to be involved in a thing where you're looking at other results and going, if they score?
Yeah, it was a horrible day that day. Obviously, as you say, with the penalty.
Obviously, we were against
Northampton. Justin and Kurz. So there was a little bit of friction. I don't think Justin and Kurz were happy with the way they were sacked and what they felt was going on. But so there was a little bit on the sideline, wasn't there, with Aidy and Steve Lovell and things like that. But that's out of our hands. I don't know what that was all about. But it was horrible because you're trying to wait for cheers and whatever else, and you don't know scores, and you're trying to concentrate on your own game. You've got one team playing with no worries because they're win, lose or draw, they're fine, and then you've got us, means everything to us. And they're not nice. They're nice once the final whistle's over and you know you've heard or you know you're safe.
Yeah.
During the game, they're very twitchy, very horrible, and they're not nice to be involved in. You'd much rather either be safe or playing for something at the top of the league rather than that.
How would you compare it to playing in one of those and celebrating staying up to celebrating winning at Wembley and getting promoted? Is it more relief than
the
celebration?
Staying up once is more relief than, like, thank God for that.
Is there still a massive party afterwards?
Yeah, it's still like you're happy, you can suddenly relax and celebrate and think of the summer and holiday, like, yes, we're standing in the division, we can go again. but the celebration of like a promotion that you can't explain. It's like words. You'll never be able to explain it. It's just
historic, isn't it?
It's just brilliant. It's just what it's all about, what football and life's all about, really.
Yeah. Your fine form in front of goal reported interest from Nottingham Forest, as you said. Did anything ever come to fruition? Was there any talks of your move to the championship?
Look, you score that many goals at a decent age in League One, you're going to attract interest from bigger clubs, maybe in that division and above. And I don't know how concrete the Nottingham Forest one was. I know there was calls, I know there was messages and whatever else, and it's a humongous football club. But the closer one was Cheltenham. Mm-hmm. And I know there was discussions with the Cheltenham one, and obviously I come through at Cheltenham, and again, it's a football club, a big football club, and there's no denying it for me that Cheltenham would probably were offering a bigger contract, a better contract. But at the same time, this is what I just touched upon then, if A.D. Pennett and whoever else who it was at Gillingham showed that they wanted me to stay, they wanted to look after me, wanted to treat me well and reward me and thank me in what I did, or literally just make me feel wanted, because at that time I didn't feel wanted. I could see I was getting edged out in pre-season with the games I was playing and the way I was getting treated. I heard stuff, I could get told stuff in football, everyone talks, and I was told a few things. And then come the start of the season, I wasn't starting after what I'd done the season before, and I was no different in pre-season, you know. I came back with a fantastic attitude. And I could just see it from minute one that they didn't want me or other characters like that there, big characters and people that loved the club and had the club at heart, and that was what the weird thing was, and people that give everything for the club.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I don't know what it was. I don't know if they feared it. I'm not sure.
Other managers have welcomed that with open arms. It's very strange.
I'm not sure what it was all about. So for me to sit here and say to you that in the end I didn't turn around to the club and say that I wanted to leave, I'd be lying. I would have stayed at Gillingham, and I would have stayed in the contract I was on if I was shown that I was wanting them and they wanted to keep me. But there was interest, how far it went, there was discussions more with the Cheltenham one, things didn't materialise, but the problem was things got messy. Things got messy within the club with me and like them and me, if you like, and with me in it. It wasn't a nice place for me to be. I wasn't getting treated quite as well as I should have done, and I was happy to crack on and get on with it, but in the end it got a little bit too messy and whatever else. So the thing with the contract was best for both parties, if you like. And I basically, bearing in mind when I first came to Gillingham, not many know this, but I was playing for Gillingham for nothing. I wasn't even on the contract, so I wasn't getting paid, and I gave that for the good of the club and for myself as well. But that shows the type of character and person I am. And in the end, I didn't ask for any money to get out of my contract. I basically gave up money, if anything, and we worked out an agreement. And I never had anywhere to go. I never had anything concrete. And one or two things had fallen through, and obviously I ended up signing for Southend sometime after. But it was a risky thing that I had done, but it was basically what I was forced into and what I was pushed into. Not so much pushed into, but I just wasn't treated right and wasn't looked after maybe the way I should have been.
So talk me through that day. You scored 14 goals the last season, player of the season. Without a doubt, Gillingham fans loved you, wanted to see you play, wanted to see you be captain again.
I was gutted.
And then I assume you get a phone call from AD and go, we need to sort this out, we want you to leave the club. But talk me exactly through what happened, because I think a lot of people want to know, because it come from nowhere.
Yeah, it was disappointing, gutting, I felt let down and just frustrated, really, because I thought, this is my second spell at the club, will I ever get a third? I said to you many a time I could have seen myself, the fact that it's quite local to home, I was happy, everything with my family were, my missus was, and I didn't need to go anywhere. I was more than happy to stay there. And after doing so well one season and keeping a club in the division, or playing a big part in keeping a club in the division, and playing for a group of fans that love me so much and I love them, so that connection's there, which is such a big thing, it was like, what on earth's going on here? And as I say, just felt let down, frustrated, disappointed and gutted, really. And as much as it was part of not my life, it was partly my choice as well, but it had to be. For the best of both parties. And just confused, really. Confused and still to this day, it was AD actually texted me in the summer after sad news of what happened with Justin and asked me to go out to where he was. And it was all just weird. I think AD knew what I was about, especially Jamie David, his assistant as well, or coach. They knew what I was about. They knew I was a good person, a good player and a good character and leader. And there was more to it. I'll never know why, whether that was him or else other people. But I think he knows he made a mistake in what happened in the end.
I think he's just trying to tear up Justin's
I think that's what you just said there was the biggest thing. They, as a club and staff, thought I was Justin's boy.
Yeah.
And yes, Justin Simeon, I was his captain, I had a fantastic relationship with him, but just because one manager goes doesn't mean you can't do it for another manager.
Yeah, a professional like yourself is going to crack on and wear the Geneva shirt.
And I think that was that was the biggest answer. They thought I was Justin's boy and they wasn't sure how I'd feel and if I wanted to be there and if I'd do it for them and if I would be looking elsewhere and things like that. That's what I think it was.
Well, we need to end soon, but one last question is, obviously a lot of Jules fans would love the opportunity to say bye to you. I think a lot of people see you as a cult hero at Jules. I can't tell you how much people did love you. Is there any messages you'd like to say to the Jules fans?
The biggest thing for me is it makes me happy and proud when I see them winning games on a Saturday. They are one of, if not the first result I look for every single week. I will always have friends there, and as in the fans, they're the main people I care about. I've also got some teammates there who I'm close with. I will be back one day in some capacity. I will already have been back to play against you, but I'll be back in some capacity because I want to stay in football when I finish. So whatever way, I don't know what and how, but I will be. Playing wise, maybe, who knows, maybe that could happen, maybe that's past, we don't know, you never know in football, but I love the football club, they'll always be in my heart, you know what I think of the whole place and you fans, and it's a shame how it ended. I would love to have had a farewell and a goodbye when you play over 100 times for a club and you're successful for the football club and have that connection and bond with the fans. It's a shame the way it ended. That was mainly out of my hands. It was something that I couldn't really control in the end, albeit I played a part in, but it was, as I just said, it was sort of it got messy because of other people rather than myself. And no, listen, I love the football club. It's a club that will always be close to my heart, and there'll be more with me and Gillingham, as I say, in some way, and I can't wait for that day because I see myself, as I say, back at Gillingham doing something in some way one day.
There will be a link attached to this podcast to the Justin Edinburgh Foundation, run by his son Charlie, which obviously you've got a big part in. Josh, thank you very much for your time, and good luck for the rest of the season with Leighton Orient.
No problem. Appreciate it. Thank you. And as on that, just the J3 Foundation, we all know where it is on the social media and the links, raising as much awareness for that and funds and different bits and bobs for that is obviously massive and can save people's lives, and we all know what it's there for now and what we're trying to achieve and raise awareness for. And Charlie obviously is doing fantastic, and any support and any awareness for that would be much appreciated.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for your time, and
thank you.
Up the Jules.
Yep, up the Jules.